I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. And welcome to Minute 88 of Season 6 of Mover a Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Emily Graziano of the Flapper Dame Film Blog. Welcome back to the show, Emily.
As always, it's so great to be here, and it's going to be a really, really fun episode, I feel.
Yeah, just make sure you don't get a sore throat or a cold or something like that. You know, there's something going on. There's something going around in the Bailey household, possibly. Maybe, you know, is it COVID? You know, it's 1946 COVID, 1945 COVID. Who knows? So minute 88 begins with Mary trying to explain things to George, and ends with Mary beginning to start to spell. So we ended things yesterday with George finding out that something has happened with Zazu, and you know he wants to know what's going on. And today's minute begins with Mary explaining it. She says, "Oh, she just got a cold. She's in bed. Caught it coming home from school. They gave her a flower for a prize, and she didn't want to crush it, so she didn't button up her coat. What is it? A sore throat or what? No, it's just a cold. The doctor says it's nothing serious. The doctor." Was the doctor here? Yes, I called him right away. He says it's nothing to worry about. Is she running a temperature? What is it? Just a teensy one, 99.6. She'll be all right. Of course, it's this old house. I don't know why we all don't have pneumonia. So, I mean, first of all, this is a great conversation between George and Mary. You know, that it goes back to what we were saying yesterday. You know, that this movie really gives us down-to-earth conversations between these characters that make things so believable. Yeah. I mean, this is a typical conversation that a father and mother could be having about any of their kids. You know, so it works really well. I also love the way that they do this, that Mary is busy as she's talking. You know, she hasn't stopped doing whatever she's doing. You know, she walks into the kitchen, he's following her, and then she opens the oven and takes out, you know, two trays of muffins. Did you notice that? Did you notice what she was taking out?
I didn't realize that it was muffins. I just really, like, I love it how she's, like, being the multitasker here. She's not stopping to talk to him. They don't have to look each other in the eye. They're just talking, and she's still cleaning and getting ready, like the food and setting up for the party later. And it just, like you said, it's so believable. And the one thing that I notice is that Mary has this all under control, and then George is the one saying, "Well, doctor, what doctor? Like, is she gonna be okay?" And Mary's like, "We're gonna be fine. She just needs rest." Just like she has it all under control, and then George is the one getting all worked up. And maybe he'd get worked up even if he wasn't dealing with this money problem, but this is like the thing that I'm over the edge. Like, I'm dealing with all of this, and now my kid is sick.
Right. I have a feeling that George is, on the one hand, I don't think he would be as concerned if this was happening on a different day, you know, when he wasn't as stressed out. I think that's the first part of it. And I think on the other hand, I mean, they're trying to show he's a, mm-hmm. he's a good father. You know, he had a great role model of Peter Bailey, and now he is the one who's, you know, raising his four kids along with Mary. And, you know, he wants to be a presence in their lives, and he wants to know what's going on mm-hmm. with them. Here he finds out that his daughter is sick. So he wants to, you know, he's getting overly concerned about everything, even though he knows that Mary is the one who is taking mm-hmm. care of everything. You know, She's the one trying to reassure him. You know, she's saying, okay, she came home from school. This is what happened. You know, she got a little cold. He's the one who's jumping the gun. He's saying, well, does she have a sore throat? You know, and, you know, maybe she might have, you know, we all should have pneumonia. You know, he's throwing out all these different things, you know, with the, it, which again, he's overreacting a little bit here. Now, for me, I always think it's very funny the fact that, you know, she just walked home from school and she got a cold that quickly, you know, by not buttoning up her clothes, buttoning up her coat. My assumption is that, you know, she must have had warm clothing on underneath anyway, if it's that cold, you know, so this isn't something, you know, it's not as if she was wearing a t-shirt and shorts or something like that underneath the coat. And that's what's kept her. You know, she probably, you know, had something. The fact that she kept her coat open in order to save the flower, my assumption means that means it must have been very windy, because normally, you know, why would you need to put the flower, you know, inside your coat but not close the coat? You know, that's my interpretation.
Maybe she was on the verge of catching something anyway. Like, maybe her immune, like, maybe she was just prone to catching something because winter, and you know how you can feel yourself getting sick. Maybe that just put her over the edge to be sick.
Okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. I definitely could believe that makes it very believable. You know, I definitely think so. And you know, the idea though is that, again, Mary, as soon as she came home, she already called the doctor. You know, which is a little funny to me, that it's that quickly you're going to get the doctor there to go check her out, and the doctor's going to, you know, did they say the doctor? Yeah, the doctor came over. It wasn't that he did a house call, that he just called up on the phone or something like that. He actually showed up to take a look at her, you know, and said, oh, it's just a cold. It's nothing serious. You know, that's it. You know, but George is, I mean, if only HMOs were like that these days, right? Where you can just call up the doctor and he'll come over, you know, right after school. And everything's fine.
Yeah, it's interesting that there's been that shift. Like, now we have to go out to the doctor instead of the doctor coming to you.
Well, I think that's also, you know, at the time, at least, it was because people were living farther away from each other. You know, it wasn't a question of, you know, it would be a longer journey for everyone to go to the doctor, as opposed to just calling the doctor and having the doctor, you know, whether if you're talking about a Western, you know, ride over, or, you know, or just show up, stuff like that. But again, nowadays, but also these are small towns, so the doctors aren't working at a hospitals or anything like that.
Oh, very true, very true.
You know, here nowadays, you know, most of the doctors they're working at an HMO, or they're working at the hospital, or whatever it is. That you don't have very many private doctors, and the private doctors you have will have an office somewhere, you know, a centralized location type of thing. So, yeah. But again, they have a good HMO plan in Bedford Falls, so that works well.
Very well.
Yeah. And then you know, George continues. I mean, I love how he blames the house for it. You know, which in a roundabout way, he's basically blaming Mary for buying this house and for relying on the fact that they could fix it up well in the 12 or 13 years that they've been married. You know, even though it looks she does a pretty good job of fixing up this house, so you can't really complain about it from that perspective. But apparently it's still a little drafty, because then George says, drafty old barn, might as well be living in a refrigerator.
Well, yeah, that's something that I kind of relate to, because I always say to my father, I'm like, why is it always like inadequate temperature in this house? And he says it's the tri-level setup of this house. They're just known to be difficult to heat and cool. I'm like, no, is it because this house was like a model house and built quickly? And he's like, well, I don't know, maybe. And so I always say, oh, that's why we're always freezing, or that's why we're always like boiling in the summer. It's because of this house's build and makeup. And he's like, he doesn't really get frustrated like I do about it, but I'll say like, oh, it's this house, isn't it? It's this house. So I.
That's interesting. Maybe he's just playing with the thermostat all the time and you don't know it.
No, I would.
He's like, how can I piss off Emily? Ooh, I'm going to just I'm gonna turn the heat up.
No. My mother, she makes sure that she has control over it because she doesn't like hot spells and stuff like that. So she always has my back on that. But I'm always like, it's this house layout, isn't it? Like, I'm always the one blaming the house. So I actually quite relate to George Bailey on that one.
Okay. That is definitely fair. So he mentions a refrigerator. when do you think the first refrigerator was created?
So does the ice box count, or the refrigerator where you could store food in it?
Whatever you want. You can talk about the modern one, or you can talk about different cooling systems that involved ice and things like that.
Well, I'm gonna, again, isn't it the Victorian era, maybe the 1850s, maybe we had ice boxes?
Right. Okay. So, I mean, they started with artificial refrigeration in the mid 1700s.
Oh, wow.
But it became more popular in the early 1800s, which the 1800s, that's closer to the Victorian era. In 1834, they invented the first working vapor compression refrigeration. Then an ice making machine was invented in 1854. And then in 1913, that's when they started making refrigerators for home use, where Frigidaire was one of the first ones to make a self-contained unit. For that, because they would use Freon in order to keep things cold in there.
Okay, well, there I have a mini story about my grandfather's ice box as a child. His father rigged the ice box with a hose mechanism, so never had to empty it. He rigged it so all the ice melting would be let out outside somehow. Yeah,
oh, wow.
I never knew the setup or anything, but I just my grandfather would always tell the story how his father set up a rig so they never had to empty the ice box, and they never had to they never had to worry about the melted water.
Oh wow. What was his profession, your great-grandfather?
I'm actually not sure. All I know is that he had quite an innovative mind. He did a rotating Christmas tree before they had them, back in the 20s or 30s.
Oh wow.
He did all these rig setups. He was very, very, he would just be very, very innovative with all these interesting little gadgets around the house. I don't think he worked in that profession, but he just could build things like that, come up with it in his mind and make it happen.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah,
really cool.
I wish I could have met him, but
that's
I never did.
Cool.
So.
Right. But you got to hear the stories from your grandfather.
Yeah.
That's already something. And now you've passed that on to everyone in the listening community. So now everyone knows that story. Yeah. Everyone that listens to this podcast now knows that story.
Oh, so
you see that you're letting that information out. I hope that's what you wanted to.
Most definitely, because I think that's just interesting.
Yes, it actually is. No, he probably, I mean, I'm definitely not a handy person, but what he probably did was figure out a way of making a hose that would drain it, that when the ice melted, it would just go into the hose, and then the hose was threaded through some hole that takes it outside.
Yeah, that's...
That would be the way my simple mind works when it comes to these things. I am not handy at all.
That's what I've always tried to picture it as. And I'm like, so wait, he put a hole in the wall or something? That's what I kept trying to ask. I don't know if my grandfather even knew the mechanisms of it. He just knew that his father rigged something so he never had to, none of the kids had to empty the ice box.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. And George continues to complain and says, why do we have to live here here in the first place and stay around this measly, crummy old town? So now, he's throughout this movie, he wants to get out of Bedford Falls, but he never really complains this much. This is a huge complaint. He's now regretting the fact that he didn't leave here.
Yes.
Because he's thinking of, impending prison. I think that's what's guiding him at this point.
Most definitely, it is.
And then Mary turns to him and goes, George, what's wrong? And he goes, wrong. Everything's wrong. You call this a happy family? Why do we have to have all these kids? Which, again, no connection whatsoever. You know, he's just he's completely discombobulated with everything that he's saying because there's no connection. What does that do with the fact that they have a lot of kids? You know, that doesn't sound like a reason for anything. You know, and I love the way that throughout this whole conversation, I mentioned this before, you know, we saw that she took out of the oven what looked like muffins, right? But then afterwards, she takes out like a roast pan and opens the pan and starts taking out chicken and stuff like that. Now, to me, it looked to me that she took them out from the same oven. You know, I don't know. Will people bake and cook, you know, like something in a roast pan and, you know, baking pastries with, do you do that together? I would think that you would do it separately because it's a different, you know, different temperatures and the idea of the aromas and all that
I
stuff.
definitely wouldn't want, like, if I'm baking the same type of cookie, I can put two of the same cookie sheet in the oven. But if I'm baking two different sorts of cookies, I wouldn't even put them in the same oven because the aromas would, like, mix in with each other.
Exactly, and that's what she does here. And she takes them both out from the same oven. They're on different shelves on the in the oven, but still, it just is very
I
strange.
most
You
definitely wouldn't do that.
know, and I mean, she has cake flour on the. You know, you can see that she's been working on something that she was baking and didn't clean up after herself. You know, well, but you know, she has time before the party starts for that. But it's just very interesting. I happened to notice this when I was doing research. I never noticed this before because when you watch a movie, you generally don't pay attention to the little things that people are doing as they're talking. You know, you're paying more attention to what they're saying, not to what
And
they're
it's
doing.
the plot. You're more so concerned about what they're going to say, how they're going to interact with the character next.
Exactly. As opposed to, you know, taking both baked goods and cooked goods out of the oven at the same, cooking them in the oven at the same time. You know, little strange mix and match there. Yeah. And obviously George is completely bitter about everything that's going on. And, you know, as he gets like a few seconds and then, you know, Pete comes into the kitchen and goes, Dad, how do you spell frankincense? And George looks at him and goes, I don't know. Go ask your mother. And George just starts walking towards the door. And Mary looks at him and goes, where are you going? He goes, I'm going up to see Zuzu. And then Pete says something very strange. He says, he told me to write a play for tomorrow. And I'm trying to think of who told him. I mean, I don't think George told him. So maybe he's talking about his teacher or something like that. Because he says, he told me to write it. You know.
And that's interesting that he'd have like a male teacher at the elementary level.
That wants him to spell frankincense. No, but also, again, he wants to write a play for tomorrow. Tomorrow is Christmas Day. So, you know, he wouldn't be going to school on that day. So I don't know, maybe it's like the local pastor asked him to do it.
Isn't
Maybe it's
he
like
on
a
like
play
this
that's going to go on in their
play
church
with
or something.
some kids in the neighborhood or something?
Right. Because also you would think, you can correct me if I'm wrong because I'm really just you know saying this from the hip, but you would think that they don't have the Christmas plays on Christmas. They would usually happen a few days before, right?
So at the church that I went to, the children's little Christmas play would be done on Christmas Eve. It was never done on like Christmas Day because masses run all day, and to make sure you don't run over with like, because communion take the church communion takes up, like, you have to give Eucharist to every single member that goes up there, and that can like make a mass run long or short. So like they would always do a Christmas nativity play for the children on Christmas Eve. So yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't think any church being sensible would purposefully make a mass run longer than it needed to go
Right.
on Christmas Day.
Maybe it's Uncle Billy who asked him to do it because Uncle Billy, doesn't know what day it is and doesn't know what's going on. He keeps forgetting. So, maybe he just says, "Oh, let's, Pete, why don't you write a little play for Christmas, and we'll do the pageant tomorrow."
Christmas
Who knows?
Day.
There you go. Or maybe Potter asked him to do it. That would be even. Potter's like, I don't want people to be busy with other things. Let them come and listen to your play. And then George starts walking out of the kitchen, and we hear once again the piano playing that Janie's been doing as George leaves the kitchen. So he's just talking right now about the dilapidated house and how it's like a shack and it's freezing and all that stuff. And as he's walking up the stairs, he grabs onto the knob at the of this of the banister. There you
Railing?
go. The railing,
Oh,
the
okay, the
railing, the
banister.
banister, right? And the knob just comes out in his hand, which it's pretty interesting. I mean, we saw this happen beforehand also. This happened back when this house was still being built or being renovated, basically. You'd think that they would have done something to make that a little more permanent. Or maybe Mary just likes
Yeah.
to keep it there. Maybe she likes to keep it there for the fun. Who knows? I don't know. That's and so he's been so annoyed up until now. Now he gets even more annoyed by the way that he's looking at this whole thing, because it's like he looks like he's ready to throw it.
Yeah, definitely.
And then like he runs up the stairs. So that's also interesting. How he's just running up the stairs. And then the minute ends with Mary beginning to spell. She goes FRAN, and then the minute ends there. So did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Yeah, just the one thing where Jimmy Stewart, well, George Bailey says, "Go ask your mother." Like, that is such a legit answer. I can recall when my mother would be sick when I was little, like just with a cold or something, and sometimes naturally she wouldn't be making dinner, so sometimes like my sister and I would make like boxed macaroni and cheese in the microwave or whatever, and I'm like, and I'd go up to my dad and ask him, "Wait, can I make this since we're not having dinner?" And he's like, "Oh, I don't know. You better go ask your mother about that." It's like, well, she's not going to be cooking for all of us, and I don't want to bother her, so that's why I'm asking you. But yet he would still say, "Oh, go ask her. Just
Right.
go ask her." So that is a totally believable
Yeah. Okay.
answer right there.
I can believe that too. I mean, there's the famous cartoon or meme that basically has kids come and they go, "Mom, mom, 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 mom." They're asking questions. They're constantly asking questions to mom, and then they go, then you see one of them that says, "Dad," and he goes, "Yeah, what do you want?" And he goes, "Where's mom?" Yeah, it fits in with that too.
Great.
Okay, so every Wednesday we have a segment called It's a Wonderful Wednesday. Over the last 77 years since this movie came out, there have been many, many, many different types of media that have tried to copy the idea of It's a Wonderful Life and try and make it better, but none of them come anywhere close. But what I decided to do is every week I focus on a different venue that has taken the idea of It's a Wonderful Life, meaning a character who wishes that they were no longer alive, or that they never existed, or some variant of that. So I've discussed so many different things over the last few weeks, but what I decided to choose for this week is something that's a little it's a wonderful life with a little twist.
Okay.
I'm not sure how familiar you are with movies from the late 70s and 80s. So there were two movies at the end of 1970s with George Burns called Oh God. So you have Oh God and Oh God Book Two. Have you seen either of those?
No.
Have you heard of them?
No.
Okay.
For some reason, I don't know. It's like 70s films, there's just something about them that isn't as appealing. I don't know what it is, but.
Okay, that's fair. So basically, George Burns plays God. He's this he was already in his close to his 80s at that point. His character plays God, and in the first two movies, he helps out people, helps out in each movie a different person that is needing some sort of help from God. They've asked for help from God, and he's there to help them. But the movie that I'm
Okay.
going to actually talk about is the third movie in the series, which is called Oh God, You Devil, which came out in 1984, where George Burns actually plays a dual role. He plays both God and the devil. And I got to say, as much as I enjoy George Burns playing the character of God because it feels so natural, he does an amazing job playing the role of the devil. I mean, the movie itself is not that great. The idea is it's about this aspiring musician played by Ted Wass that is interested in making it big. And at one
Okay.
point he says, "I will sell my soul to the devil in order to, to become a famous rock star." And therefore, George Burns's character, the devil, decides to have this guy sign a contract, that he will sell his soul to the devil, and he will then become this famous rock star. But what the part of the deal that this character doesn't realize is that he will lose his own normal life. He's transferred into the life of a rock star, and then the rock star is then given his life.
Oh,
So
wow.
he's trying to, he's on the one hand, he's enjoying his fame and fortune, but he misses his wife. And he constantly wants to know what's going on with his wife. And, he ends up meeting his wife, and his wife is now married to theoretically him, but it's someone else, it's a different person who's playing him.
Yeah.
But he's the only one who knows that this is what's going on. Everyone else is already, they look at this new him, and they believe it's the same person and stuff like that. So it's an interesting twist to the idea of It's a Wonderful Life. It's the idea that, okay, if you could live someone else's life, and that person will live your life, and how that works and stuff like that. And in the end, I mean, I'm not going to give away everything in the movie, but God shows up to try and help this guy break this deal with the devil, because the devil basically cheated him. Part of the idea of the contract was that the devil wanted the contract for 7 years, and he wasn't sure, so the devil crossed out the idea of it's a 7-year contract. He said we'll do a trial period, but he basically lied and doesn't want to. So God comes in to try and help. Again, it's a fun movie. It's not that great, but I liked rewatching it. It's something I haven't seen probably in about 10 years from the last time I saw it. Even like I'm pretty sure I saw it in the theater when I was 10, or maybe I saw it numerous times on cable. That I don't remember, back when it came out. But it was a fun movie. So it's not as great as It's a Wonderful Life, but it is still a movie that I would recommend that people check out just to see George Burns's performance as the devil, which is great to
Okay.
watch.
That's interesting. And this guy's lived, you said, now who is it plays the
Well,
rock
that plays
star?
the main character, Ted Wass.
Okay, so he gets to live out this 80s rock star life. Yeah, that's always interesting because I was basically raised on like 80s rock music, so that would be interesting watch.
And again, we see that he's enjoying the lifestyle of an 80s musician, with the idea of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. But at a certain
Yeah.
point, he realizes that's not what he wants. He wants to be back with his wife, because they were trying to have a child, and then when he meets her, she's actually pregnant, and
Oh, wow. Wow.
So again, you could read a lot into that about what happened and how it happened and when it happened and whatever, but it doesn't really matter. Like I said, it's a fun thing to check out, if you have
Okay,
time.
interesting.
Okay, so Emily, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Okay, I am on my film blog first and foremost at theflabberdamefilm.wordpress.com, and then I'm on Twitter and Instagram at flabberdame16, and then I'm under my name Emily Graziano on YouTube, where I talk not only film but like classic rock music, like from the 70s and 80s. and also film. So that's where you can find me.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can rate, review, subscribe any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, moviearoundminute.com. So until tomorrow, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.